large flagon in his hands, he didn't quite manage to hide behind his back. "Thanks for that. You're welcome." Maybe he was drunk. No sober man in his circumstances would smile so stupidly. I turned my attention to Maud. I wasn't stumbling in the dark. I was walking the grounds. Because I live here. You are the guests. The half-naked knight slid off the table. I kept my gaze stubbornly aimed at his face and nothing below it. Not the lean muscles etched into his abdomen, nor the sharp V they made over his hips, not the line of dark hair that trailed from his navel into his waistband.
"Must be something special."
Smoke bloomed from the part in his lips.
"Being a diviner."
He didn't sound like he thought it was special. "It's a privilege to divine. To be divined for, too. You might know that, had you bothered to attend the ceremony."
"You noticed me go, did you?"
"Difficult not to, what with the show you made." Maud cleared her throat. The knight turned, the two sharing a look I could not read. I saw it then. The thing I'd missed with him turned only half toward me on the table. The reason his shirt was off. A dark, vicious cluster of bruises, decorating the right side of his body. Damaged, mottled skin over what surely was at least one broken rib. "What happened?" I blurted. He looked down at his side, peered at me through another plume of smoke.
"None of your business."
King Castor forced out a laugh.
"Is there anything I can get for you, Diviner? That water, perhaps?"
He bustled through the commons, placing the flagon he'd kept hidden behind his back on the table near a ratty old notebook, and I heard the glugs and sloshes of its contents. A familiar smell touched the air. I sniffed like a dog. I knew that damn smell. It filled the room, rising from the flagon. Not wine, as I presumed, nor sharp like the night's smoke, but sweeter, more putrid. Like rotting flowers. Ashling's spring water. The shirtless knight glowered.
"Diviner?"
My stomach rolled. Bile I thought had all been spent on the cathedral floor returned, and before I could pay the knight's impudence back with my own, I put a hand to my stomach, heaved forward, and was sick on his boots. I ran. Maud, who was halfway through her alarmed cry of, "What the fuck?" stumbled back. My shoulder collided with her pauldron, and then I was sprinting into the night. Through darkness and grass, and onto a crude stone path, I made my way to the stone cottage where the diviners lived. I was nearly there when I heard him behind me.
"Diviner."
I didn't look back.
"Diviner."
A rickety wood gate stood between me and the last 20 paces to my door. I caught myself on it, fumbling for the latch. It groaned, clicked open. A hand came from behind me, pinning the gate shut. When I looked down, I realized why it had taken him so long to catch me. He'd removed his boots, the ones I'd unceremoniously spat bile upon. There was a reason we diviners were kept out of sight after a dream. It was not worthy of our image, our station, that we should be seen as frail, that dreaming of gods was, in any way, diminishing. It was not known how sick Ashling's spring water made us. My entire body burned that I should be made vulnerable in front of this asshole. I turned. The knight was right behind me. "Step back," I snapped. He was looking at my shroud, at me, like I was a venomous ass. Transfixed and repulsed. This close, I could see the thing he was smoking was branch-like, thin and gnarled, and no longer than my middle finger. He put his lips to it, withdrew his hand from the gate, and took 3 full steps back. It was still too close. His bareness.
"You couldn't have put on a shirt?"
His eyes roamed my body, then immediately withdrew. He threw his head back, shot smoke out of his mouth at the sky.
I could say the same to you.
I looked down at my wet divining robe, thin and clinging. Lecher. Why does the king have spring water in that flagon?
Don't know what you mean.
I could smell it. You sure you weren't just smelling yourself? You reek of Aisling. The knight was tall, but he did not wield it. Knees bent, he kept his weight pitched forward in a lazy slouch, like it was a labour standing at full height.
Have you been in the cathedral this entire time?
Why?
Benji would like to know.
Who?
Benedict Castor.
His eyelids lowered in annoyance.
The king.
Brazen, this knight. The title of king might not carry the same influence as the abbess's, or even as a diviner's, but he was still majesty, or sire, nothing as dull and flippant as Benji. My stomach made an appalling squelching sound. Yes, I've been in the cathedral. The knight's gaze, his face, proved a challenging translation. His eyes were unfathomably dark, catching moonlight and gifting it back as he surveyed me. All I could read of him was that he did not like my shroud. He'd glance at it, frown, then look at a spot above my head, like he'd rather talk to the air than a half-obscured face.
Is it the blood or the spring water that makes you vomit?
None of your business. He took another drag off the branch he was smoking, then held it out to me.
Here.
What is it?
Petrified idleweed. It'll help with the nausea, with the discomfort.
I smiled, hostility seated on my lips as my gaze flitted to the bruises along his side. I'm not the one enduring discomfort. Beyond this conversation, at least. He smiled back, equally hostile. His teeth were white, straight, except the front, bottom three, which were crowded. A pallid row of disorganized soldiers. Were he to bite me, I imagined the indent would be as unique as his fingerprint. What a horrible thought.
With the nausea, then?
Smoke plumed from his nostrils. Again, he offered the idleweed.
Or is it a bad portent, smoking under a silver moon?
Not everything is a sign.
Could have fooled me. I can't go anywhere in this wretched kingdom without hearing about how a coin fell, or ink spilled, or water moved, or the wind chimed, or a fucking thread snapped.
He shook his head, laughed without warmth.
It's clever, Aisling's system. The stone objects the omens are known for are common, their portents vague. The margin for error and misinterpretation is so wide, my horse would die of starvation trying to get from one end to the other. And yet, this cathedral, this hallowed ground, is the only place in Traum where people can justify that wasting one's life looking for signs is a life well spent.
They pay hard-earned coin to do so. The shock of his irreverence whipped through the air. I felt it sting upon my cheek. This kind of blasphemy was something the knighthood was supposed to root out of the hamlets, not cultivate within their ranks. Not in my 10 years at Aisling had someone dared speak to me this way. What a vile man, unworthy of his station. I'd known it from the moment I'd clapped eyes on him that he was crude, indecent, the foulest knight in all of Traum. My entire body bristled. It's not a waste. Divination takes away the pain of the unknown. Knowing if you are headed for something good or ill-fated is like peering into the future. It's magic what the omens do. What I do. I leaned against the gate and ripped the idleweed from his hand. Show some fucking deference. He watched me through eyes so dark I'd lost sight of his pupils. When he spoke, low and deep, it was like two voices sounding at once, that warm, rich tone, and a deep rasp, like knuckles dragged over gravel. What's your name? I brought the idle weed to my lips and drew in a tentative inhale. The smoke burned down my throat, sharp and hot. What's your name?
Roderick Mendacious.
He winced, like he'd strung an out-of-tune fiddle.
Rory.
My eyes watered. The smoke in my lungs had gone itchy. A cough that refused to be dampened bubbled in my throat. I put a sleeve to my mouth and hacked. The corner of Rory's mouth twitched. 6. His brows lifted.
6.
Oh, a fuzzy feeling was settling into me. The nausea in my stomach had uncoiled. Another puff of the idle weed, and it was gone. Another, and the hollowness in my limbs was replaced by a warm, blanketing haze.
That's plenty.
Rory plucked the idle weed, which was just about gone, from my mouth. He dragged it over his bottom lip, took a final pull, and dropped it onto the path.
6 is a number, not a name.
We don't deign to speak our real names.
Just like you don't show your eyes.
His gaze flickered over my shroud.
Why is that, by the way? No one seems to know.
I kept my lips sealed.
So, it's a secret.
He nodded.
And I suppose it's also a secret why no one but high and holy diviners are allowed to drink Ashling's spring water.
I thought of the flagon in King Castor's hands. It's been attempted. Only a few years ago, a merchant from Coulson Fair was so desperate to see the omen signs, he rushed down the nave and drank from the spring like a pig from a trough. The gargoyles clocked him over the head and dragged him into the courtyard. He didn't dream, of course, but he did vomit until he was sobbing. So, tell your king to go ahead and drink his stolen spring water. Just take care to mind your boots. Rory glowered, and I rolled my shoulders. Only diviners dream, I said.
But what is a diviner, really?
A foundling? He looked me up and down. The abbess strips you of name, face, clothes, distinction, cloisters you to the cathedral grounds, where you are destined to drink blood and drown and dream. You know of the omens and signs, and how to look down your nose at everyone, but nothing of what really goes on in the hamlets. Nothing of the real traum that awaits you the moment your tenure is up, which, given your age, can't be too long now. He sucked his teeth and grinned at me in a way that was not at all friendly.
Careful, Number 6. Someone will accuse you of having too much fun up here on this god-awful hill.
Heat choked up my neck. How dare he?
Hold your tongue, or I'll rip it out. I serve gods.
You serve a boy king who has just garnered 5 ill portents. Only one of us is worthy of reproach. So abruptly I kicked up gravel, I turned on my heel and snapped open the gate to my cottage.
Aren't you going to apologize for my boots? He called after me.
I turned to shout at him, throw gravel maybe, but Roderick Mendacious had already proffered me his back. Night carved shadows across broad muscles as he walked away.
It's been a privilege, diviner,
he threw over his shoulder. I seethed all night and got no rest. Chapter 4. Blackmail, for instance. Dawn came, and the wind drifting through the cottage window travelled on a mournful note. Breeze always caught along the Tor, and Traum was a windy land at that. I wondered if all of the hamlets sounded wailful when the wind blew. The cottage door slammed. Voices reached the bedroom landing, and the staircase began its usual chorus of creaky complaints.
I still think we should castrate him, I smiled.
1 and 3 and 4 had not been on their mattresses when I'd come to bed last night. They'd been out all night, and were now hauling themselves into the large bedroom that hosted all 6 of us diviners, throwing their cloaks down, looking like droopy flower sacks in their wrinkled white dresses. Four's nostrils were flaring, her hands spinning. It's no less than he deserves.
I sat up, stretched my arms over my head. Who are we castrating?
Don't ask, Three groaned, plopping onto her mattress. Four turned to me, drawing in an affected breath.
He's married. Wentworth is married.
And Wentworth is... the knight who all but pleaded for my attention yesterday. Obviously, I snuck out to see him.
And dragged the pair of us.
One yawned, her short brown hair pointing in all four cardinal directions, as she dropped onto the mattress next to me.
She's mad because my knight told me her knight had a wife and two little Wentworth pups back at home.
Something the bastard conveniently failed to mention while his mouth was between my legs, Four said, braiding her hair with furious fingers.
Two and Five sat up, rubbing sleep from their eyes.
The first man in history to lie about being married, Two muttered, pulling back the blankets so Three could collapse next to her on their shared mattress.
But he's a knight!
Four's cheeks went a deeper shade of scorn red.
My armour may dent, my sword may break, but I will never diminish. Isn't that their creed?
She stalked to the opposite side of the room, where a small wooden table was fitted with a cracked-looking glass, and sat on its lip.
They're supposed to keep rules, you know, be good at love and faith and war, and inane things like that.
Of course knights keep rules, one rubbed her eyes, the utmost being never mention wives, the next don't talk with your mouth full, I offered.
Five chuckled, lay back down, and immediately began to snore.
Four peered at her reflection in the looking glass, pushing the corners of her downturned mouth up into an uncanny smile.
I hate that we have to sneak around for a little fun. It attracts the truly idiotic.
Her eyes found one in the mirror.
Was yours any good?
One shrugged.
He mainly rattled on about his family's factory in the siege. I had to kiss him to shut him up. The evening slightly improved after that.
Only the gargoyles travelled into Traum to do the abbess's bidding. We diviners weren't permitted visitors to our cottage, and we certainly weren't permitted to leave the tour until our 10 years of service were up. Not all of us took those rules so acutely to heart. If we wanted a bedmate, we could easily have one. Ashling Cathedral was never bereft of visitors, and the tour was vast. We could lay in the grass with someone. The bolder diviners... not me, mind, namely Four and Three and sometimes One, even left the tour on occasion, sneaking down the Holloway Road to a nearby glen or Coulson Fair for a night of happy impiety. But just as we hid our eyes, our names, and the illness we felt after dreaming, it was important for us diviners to hide our hearts from the strangers we bedded. To encourage the air of detached mysticism our profession required, oracles, seen and revered, but never known. Divine in public, human in private. The first stranger I'd laid down with in the tour's grass was young and green, like me, and we built up far more sweat getting his jerkin off than during what happened after. The second was a woman, and she kissed me so well beneath my dress that I thought myself in love. But then she tried to take off my shroud after I told her I could not, and I lost all my ardour. The third was over a year ago, one of King Augur's knights, and he was all that a knight should be. I can't remember his name, but he was rugged and respectful, and knew exactly how to touch me. He laid me down on the grass, and I kept still, waiting to feel the things Four talked about. Inhibition lost to desire, tenderness, and the little death that followed. They never came. After, the knight withdrew, like he knew he had not done a task well. It made me feel so rotten to be a task to him, and a failed one at that, that I had stopped taking strangers to the grass. I told myself it was better sharpening the qualities that made me divine than those that made me human, even if, in a deep, ugly place, I worried I'd made that choice because I did not know how to be human. I was the most uncomplaining diviner, ever good in the eyes of the abbess, Ashling Cathedral's best daughter. But when it came to being worldly or vulnerable, or even fun, I was an abysmal failure. Something Roderick Mendacious had so graciously pointed out the night prior. "Speaking of knights and rife misconduct," I said to the diviners, "you won't believe the absolute bore I met last..." The door to the cottage banged open. Two gargoyles, the falcon and the wolf, trudged in, their heavy steps kicking up dust. The abbess trailed behind them. She tutted, a brief hem and haw, like she already knew the merit of the conversation she'd interrupted and wanted to sponge it from the room. "Well," she knit her gloved fingers in a basket, "yesterday was rather eventful." We let out a collective sigh. "Five bad portents." One shook her head. "Poor King Castor. He's only just been chosen by the knights. Surely the nobles in the hamlets will want to meet him." Two's back was straight, a pupil desperate to impress her tutor. "How can they respect a king whom the omens frown upon?" The abbess came into the room, chose my mattress over the others, and sat next to me upon it, her fingers soothing knots from my hair. "Do not trouble yourselves with the world beyond our wall. Kings come and go. Benedict Castor is not worthy of respect, or even mention. The politics of the hamlets and the crown that answers to them do not touch Ashling." She said our creed. "Swords and armour are nothing to stone." There was nothing to do after that but to agree. But I couldn't scrub Roderick Pissing Mendacious from my mind. "You know of the omens and signs and how to look down your nose at everyone, but nothing of what really goes on in the hamlets. Nothing of the real traum that awaits you the moment your tenure is up." The abbess finished combing my hair. "The gates will open in an hour for divination. One, two, three, put on your robes and meet me in the cathedral in 20 minutes. 4, 5, her voice warmed. 6, assume your usual tasks. Join us in the cathedral after the 12th bell." She placed her hand on my cheek, then moved to the other diviners and did the same, gifting us her affection. Then she was gone, taking her gargoyles with her. "Last time I let you drag me out all night for..." One pushed to her feet. "I'm a worn-out rag." I was out of bed, throwing on my chemise and overdress, practically knocking one over to get to the door before her. "I have a proposition." "Offering to dream in my place," Three muttered. "Great, I accept." I pulled in a breath, suddenly wide awake. "How much longer is our service?" 2 months, thereabouts," Five answered. 49 days, Two corrected. I kept going. "The abbess says not to concern ourselves with what's beyond the wall, but our 10 years at Ashling are almost over, and I want to know what it's like out there. It was uncomfortable, proposing we break the rules. Maybe that idleweed had destroyed all my good sense. I'd like to leave the tour." I could feel their eyes prodding at me from behind their shrouds. "Sneak out?" Five asked, incredulous. "All of us at once." "Well, well, well, the abbess's favourite, gone rogue." Four clapped her hands. "I've been trying to convince you shrews to do this for years. I say we go to Colson Fair and have a proper evening of debauchery." She launched out of her chair. "I'm ready. Let's leave right now." "Keep your underpants on," one said. "We can't miss divination. The abbess will send the gargoyles after us." "Then we'll go after dark." "You want us to leave at night?" Five was all limbs in her animation. "What about sprites? Or thieves? Or, I don't know, bad weather? It might rain." "People leave Ashling at sunset and walk to Corston Fair in the dark all the time without being assaulted by sprites," Two said, pragmatic as always. "Ergo, we should have no trouble doing the same. If there are thieves, they'll be sorry to learn we have nothing worth stealing. If the weather is bad, it's a good job we'll be wearing our cloaks with hoods to hide our faces." She gave Five a pointed look. "Any other concerns?" Four nodded vigorously, like it had been she who'd made the winning argument. "Yeah! Ergo!"
One's attention was still on me. Not like you to want to break the rules, Six. I kept my face even. I'm capable of having fun. Who said you weren't? Five kept frowning.
Really? Six strange women in cloaks is hardly a disguise. What if someone corners us, demanding to look beneath our shrouds?
She wrapped her arms around herself.
It's not safe without an escort.
We'll take a gargoyle, Four countered.
Because that won't be conspicuous,
Three muttered.
I looked out the window, finding the pitched roof of the dormitory.
Hold tight. There might be someone else who could escort us.
I hurried down the stairs, out of the cottage into the cool morning air, and ran headlong into the bat-like gargoyle.
Ah, Bartholomew, you're looking less green around the gut this morning. I've brought your tools.
In his hands were a hammer and chisel. He shoved them at me.
Come, come. The abbess has requested that we mend the south wall.
Green around the gills is the proper expression. I peered over his shoulder. Are the king and his knights still here?
Unfortunately, yes. They are partaking in breakfast.
Good. I left him on the path, my fingers wrapped around the hammer and chisel, hurrying to find the foulest knight in all of Traum. It was still the breakfast hour, and the commons door was open. Strewn about in clusters, knights ate off tin plates. Many were already clad in armour. Or perhaps they'd never shed it. One knight choked on a mouthful of rye bread as I approached. He elbowed the man next to him, the word diviner a searing whisper on the breeze. Heads turned, conversations halted. I surveyed the crowd, frowned, then pushed into the commons. There were more knights inside, seated at the tables or standing in a crooked line at the counters fixed with food. A few lingered by the hearth, but none near the feline gargoyle with human hands who cooked the food over the fire. I sliced my gaze across the room. One of the wooden tables had been moved to the far side of the commons. At it, seated between Maud and the king, mouth turning in a sneer that was growing more familiar by the second, Roderick Mendacious. That boar. I drew air into my nostrils and marched forward. King Castor saw me coming, his porridge spoon halting halfway to his mouth. Maud's brows shot into her hairline. Did someone call for a diviner?
Pardon the intrusion, King Castor, I said, steeling myself. I need a favour.
Oh, of course.
The king wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and smiled toothily, like a nervous dog.
What can I do for you, diviner?
Not you, your majesty. I pointed my chisel at Rory's chest. Him. The bastard didn't bother lifting his gaze from his breakfast.
Awful demanding this morning, number six.
When he noted my tools, Rory bit the inside of his cheek.
I see you are armed.
He'd drawn fresh charcoal around his eyes and secured his black hair with a strip of leather. His clothes were clean, and there was even a whit of warmth in his cheeks. Daylight and an obvious bath had made a new man of him. I had the rousing vision of crashing my hammer onto his skull. What you inferred after you gave me Idleweed, I said, about me knowing nothing of Traum, of fun. I'd like you to remedy that. The king hacked out a cough.
You gave her your Idleweed. Isn't that some sort of... I don't know.
He continued to cough.
Sacrilege?
You dolt. Maud reached behind Rory and smacked King Castor's back until he stopped hacking. Diviners can drink and smoke and fuck just like anyone else. An errant knight from another table chuckled, then pretended he, too, was in the throes of a coughing fit the moment he locked eyes with Rory. I stared at the trio. Maud calling him dolt, Rory christening him Benji. These knights were closer to the king than mere soldiers, despite the age disparity between them. Benji, boyish, Rory, a young man, and Maud at least 10 years older than he was. They were intrepid, somehow, conspiratorial, all in a row on their side of the table against me,
alone on mine. Fun. Rory deadpanned, tapping his spoon on the table.
What did you have in mind?
I looked over my shoulder, lowered my voice. I want you to escort the diviners off the tour for the evening. The king's eyes widened, and so did Maud's. But Rory, he just kept tapping his spoon, chipping away the veneer of my patience.
Be your escort.
That's what I said. He shrugged.
No.
What do you mean,
no? Just that.
He smiled. You might have ridden other deferential knights hard and put them away wet, but I'm no one's errand boy. Besides, we leave for Coulson Fair in an hour.
The king went red, and Maud scrubbed a hand down her face. I heard a thump under the table, and Rory winced.
What he means, Diviner, she said, with the utmost respect, is we cannot oblige you. Every new king must visit the hamlets when his reign begins. There are ceremonies to attend. We are due at Castle Lurick this afternoon. I didn't know much about Trelm or its hamlets, but in this instance, I knew just enough. Castle Lurick is within Coulson Fair and hardly any distance away. Your knights could easily make it back here by evening.
Maud did not deny it. I was under the impression it was forbidden for diviners to leave Ashling Cathedral during their service.
It is also forbidden for anyone, save the abbess, a gargoyle or a diviner, to touch Ashling's spring water. The same spring water I smelled here in the commons last night, when I ran into you three. Not a subtle accusation. The king, Maud, Rory, they'd taken water from Ashling Spring and didn't want anyone to know. And while the why irked me, it was insubstantial to the what I could do with the information. Blackmail, for instance. My fingers danced along the necks of my hammer and chisel. Do this for me, and I will forget to tell the gargoyles, who are known to be quite violent, mind you, that I ever saw that flagon of spring water. The trio watched me from their side of the table, their gazes all variant in colour, black, green, blue, but the challenge in all three was the same.
Six diviners just ambling down the road, Maud said.
Quite the spectacle, Rory muttered.
We'll wear cloaks, I bit back. Obviously none of us want to be seen. The king leaned forward in his chair. Forgive my curiosity, Diviner. If you are disallowed to leave, Ashling, all of Trelm must surely be a stranger to you. What happens when your service is up? When you are no longer required to...
Drown? Rory offered, spinning his spoon between his fingers.
Dream? Maud corrected.
We all have tasks, crafts we learn to bolster us when we depart. King Caster nodded at my hammer and chisel.
You're to be a stoneworker?
Perhaps, if the pay is good.
The pay? The king asked, incredulous. The abbess doesn't reimburse you for your time here.
I bit down so hard, my teeth hurt. The omens first appeared to a foundling, and every diviner has been one since. That is why the money the abbess collects for divination goes to the upkeep of the cathedral and the foundling houses we diviners come from. She saved us from destitution, gave us a home, a purpose, made us special. That is our payment. I wouldn't have lived half the life I have without her.
Tap, 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 went Rory's spoon on the table. And you call wasting your time dreaming of signs living, Diviner?
I slapped the spoon out of his hand. It clattered to the floor, and I leaned in, lifting the dull end of my chisel to his nose. What would a high-born prick like you know about it?
Rory held perfectly still. He lifted his gaze to my shroud. He was looking for my eyes, for a target, but he couldn't find one.
He wrapped his fist around the chisel's stem, dropping his voice to that low, gravelly rasp.
Point this thing in my face again, and it's mine.
I'd sincerely enjoy watching you try to take it. I could feel the eyes in the room on us.
Whatever Ashling or diviners or the omens have done to garner your hatred, well done. My voice was shaking. I've been duly insulted. Now, you've stolen Ashling's spring water. I won't ask why, and I won't speak of it again, but I want something in return. So be a good little soldier and escort my diviners. King Castor and Maud and everyone else in the commons sat frozen, some mid-bite, transfixed by the diviner and the knight putting on a proper show. The only noise that perforated the room was a loud clack, clack. Then the feline gargoyle was there, putting its stone claw on my shoulder and glaring over my shoulder at Rory. It opened its mouth, flashed its teeth. Rory jerked his hand off my chisel, his entire face caught in an eye roll. I'm not going to hurt anyone, you witless hunk of stone. He leaned back in his chair, heaving his boots, which had been unmistakably polished, onto the table. Sorry, diviner, that was aimed at the gargoyle. I can see how you might be tempted to answer to that description. The gargoyle led me to the door, but I turned at the threshold. Faced the table one final time, hot with embarrassment. But for the diviners, I would bear it. Please. It happened quickly. A tightening of muscle in Rory's brow, a flare in his eyes, a genuine shred of something peeking through all his derision. It was gone as quick as it came. I spent the rest of the morning at the east wall, breaking things. Knave! Crash went my chisel into a heart of granite. Vile, loutish prat! He won't do it! The bat-like gargoyle, who was supposed to be assisting me and mixing mortar while I broke stone away from the tor to mend the wall, was picking gowan flowers. Who, Bartholomew? Crash. Did the knights say anything particular? The ones you caught at the spring last night? The gargoyle blinked, like I'd tendered him an impossible riddle.
Knights all sound the same to me. Is that an ungracious thing to say? Crash.
Maybe. Crash, crash. But as horrible as it is to admit, the stone cleaved in two, this specific knight is revoltingly distinct. When Ashling's bell chimed 12, I put my hammer and chisel away in the tool shed and went to the cathedral, walking past the dormitory stables. They were empty. So were the dining commons. The king and his knights were gone. Ashling Courtyard was full. Men and women come to say prayers to the omen statues. Others jangling as they walked, coins in their pockets, vying for one of the limited divining slots. Only those with the most coin would be chosen by the abbess. The rest would leave, invariably to return another day with more money. There was still sweat on my brow from the stones I'd been hauling when I took off my dress in the dark sacristy and donned my divining robe. I waited in silence, listened to five dream. When it was my turn, the chancel was decorated with trails of water from the diviners the gargoyles had carried away. I stepped into the spring. An aged merchant approached. He gave me his blood, his name. I looked up at the cathedral window, and the abbess pressed me into spring water. I drowned and dreamed. Coin, inkwell, ore, chime, loomstone, good portent, ill portent. I woke, the abbess's shroud looming over my face. Again, my girl, she said, holding a woman's blooded hand to my mouth. It coated my tongue, and I was pressed into water once more. When I finally made my wet, weary way back to the diviner cottage, it was almost supper time. Visitors had been expelled from the grounds. The echoes of their voices were gone, and the wind along the tor spoke in its usual mournful refrain. I stopped twice to vomit. A pale figure waited near the cottage gate, sitting in grass and leaning against the fence. Pleasant afternoon? One asked. I slumped to a seat next to her. I wouldn't say it to anyone else.
But one never made fun of me for being the abbess's favourite, for trying so hard to be the best diviner I could. It was just easier saying shameful things out loud to her, so I whispered, "I can't wait until we're free of that spring." One put her hand over mine. "Are you still up for sneaking off the tour?" "No." I looked at my feet. It was a stupid idea. "Tell me a story, then." It made me a little sick to talk. "Still. We'll go to the cliffs of Belladine and look out over the sighing sea, all six of us. We'll shout so loud and long that our echoes will sound behind us. We'll lie under the stars on beds of pink thrift flowers and stain our teeth with wine. We'll sleep, but never dream." One inhaled slowly, like she was breathing it in. "That's a good story." She turned to me. "I'm sorry you had to divine for the king. You draw the short straw so often, don't you, Six?" Her grip on my hand slackened, and I looked up. "One?" There were wrinkles on her brow, the telltale sign of a furrow. One tilted her head to the side, her shrouded gaze fixed on something in the bushes near the gate. "What's that?" On first glance, it seemed no more than a stack of twigs, but the closer I looked, the better I could see that the stack was perfectly balanced. Six twigs that smelled sharp as nettle, wrapped in a leather strip. "Idleweed." Tied around it was a note. "Be ready by nightfall. Ah. The idleweed is to spare my boots. Don't smoke it all." Coulson Fair. Coin, the only portent, the only prosperity, the only god of men, is coin. Chapter 5. Sprites in the Glen. We smoked all the idleweed. Four danced around the room, her white dress and a trail of smoke billowing behind her. "Where did you get this, Six?" I held a sprig of idleweed in the crease of my lips and brought a candle to it. Fire, smoke, inhale. This time, I didn't cough. "You'll meet him soon enough," I muttered, passing candles to two, then three, while one did the same to five. A minute later, our entire chamber was clouded in smoke and lit by a lavender sunset, the effect deliciously hazy. "Whoa." One's voice was awestruck. "There goes my nausea. Will it make me tired?" I'd stayed up well enough the night before, seething over Roderick Mendacious. "Shouldn't." Three grinned at Five, who opened her mouth with a wolfish smile and swallowed the smoke three blew into it. Two lay back on her mattress, limbs loose, and stared up at the ceiling. Of all of us, she was the least unlikely to say, "Let's do this when our service is up. Lie in bed, smoke, drink, eat. Do absolutely nothing." "Absolutely nothing," Three agreed, raising her twig of idleweed in a salute. Four moved to the centre of the room. "And when we need money, we'll work. And when we get bored, we'll play with knights or whomever we please. But we'll never give them anything. We'll only love one another." She looked around at us, and I wished then I could see her eyes, because I knew they were wide and feverish and full of assurance. Because out there, even when the shroud is off, she pointed out the window to Traum's sweeping hills, "we will be daughters of Ashling, diviners, harbingers of gods, not real women. People will want us without ever wishing to know us." She came round the room, kissed each diviner plain on the mouth. "But we'll always be so much more than that to one another." When she came to me, I lowered the idleweed from my mouth and felt Four's lips in its place. "Promise me it'll be like that," she said. I had no right to promise. I knew, just like the other women in the room, that divining, reading the omens' signs, gave me no sway over their enactment. There was no telling what tapestry the future would weave for us. Still, I said with my whole being, I promise it will.
Me too, the diviners replied, our voices catching in the smoke.
A knock sounded upon the cottage door. Four banished her intensity with a final puff of idleweed, then pinched her cheeks in the cracked looking-glass and pushed up her breasts. Well, shrews, shall we don our cloaks? They were for winter months, our cloaks. Wool and undyed, they'd been traded by a weaver from the cliffs of Belladine for a divination. And while they were heavy and hot for late summer, when we drew the hoods up, we were diviners no more, our dresses covered, our faces and shrouds perfectly obscured by shadow. Five chuckled.
We look like the statues in the courtyard.
Remember, one said at the door. No eyes, no names. We shuffled down the stairs on a tide of smoke and slipped outside into the night. The grounds were still, the gates closed, the outbuildings darkened. The gargoyles would be asleep, the abbess too. The only movement was the wind breathing through the grass. The six knights leaned up against the cottage, made no sound at all. Two jumped, then swore. The rest of us went still at the cottage door, save four, who ran headlong into the company.
Which of you is buying my first drink at the fair?
The knights grinned in her wake. Gods, I envy her, one murmured. I never know what to say to these eager puppy-dog knights. They're not all puppies. Even in the dark, I could see the faces of the knights. There were men and women in their ranks, all wearing armour, and the same awe-struck expression as they surveyed us in our hoods. All, save the tall one with three gold bands in his ear, smiled at us. Rory leaned against the cottage wall, scanning the line of diviners. He had no business telling me from the others, my face hidden in the shadow of my hood, but his gaze halted the moment it crossed me, dark eyes narrowing in an unspoken challenge. I raised the remains of my idleweed, shot smoke out of my mouth at the sky. Rory itched his nose with his middle finger. Maud came to stand before us. I could tell by the way the other knights made room for her that she was in charge. All right, diviners, she said in a low voice. There are rules to this happy little jaunt. Each of you has been assigned a knight. That way, if we split up, none of you are lost or unprotected. Keep those hoods up. Folk of Coulson are grabby at the best of times. Don't tell anyone who you are. She paused. In fact, don't talk to anyone, full stop. Last thing we want is a rumour that the knighthood is somehow undermining the abbess. She turned to her fellow knights. Don't embarrass yourselves. Don't drink too much, or gamble, or fight. Tory, I'm looking at you. If we split up, meet near the king's pyre. Keep a close eye on your diviner and get them back here before dawn. Unlike Rory, Maud had some difficulty finding me in the crowd. Is that acceptable? She said pointedly. Per our agreement? Yes. I cleared my throat. We're even. Fan-fucking-tastic, Rory muttered behind her. Maud sighed, waving the company forward. Try to have fun. We walked in silence, but there was a loudness to our verve, a buzz within us. We followed Maud down the tour to the west wall. I looked back only once at Ashling Cathedral, who, cold, beautiful, and disapproving, watched us disappear into the night. The road was called a Holloway, a sunken, tunnel-like road that led away from Ashling's tor into the vast fields of Coulson Fair. Grass and shrubs, green and brimming with life, grew at a curve, and the leafy tops of trees let in only the barest glimpse of moonlight. It was like stepping into a living tunnel, a hollow, blooming log. There was a secret spot on the west wall the other diviners always used when they snuck away from the tor, one that was not such a high drop onto the Holloway Road below. I was a little insulted how, without instruction, The knights found it. They climbed over first, then caught the diviners as they dropped to the other side. I went last, climbing up, then over the wall. I didn't need anyone to catch me. Still, just before my feet touched the ground on the other side of the wall, hands encased in gauntlets braced my hips.
"All good," said a voice.
My feet hit the road, and I turned. The knight who held me had short blonde hair and a smile wide enough that I was afforded a view of all his straight white teeth. "I'm fine," I answered, brushing him off. "My name is Hamelin Fisher, Diviner. If it's all right by you, I'll be your escort for the evening." Anyone but mendacious. Again, I said, "Fine," and we continued on. Not 10 minutes later, a noise began in the trees. I startled. There it was again, a harmony of tiny voices, laughing. The clamor grew, echoing through beech trees, through ferns and ivies and nettle brambles. I turned to one. "What's that?" High in the trees, something flitted. I looked up, and my hood fell back. There were creatures above us. Small, quick-moving. They looked like hummingbirds, their bodies brightly feathered and iridescent, only they bore no beaks, just slat-like nostrils, thin purple lips, and round, inquisitive eyes. Their jointed arms and legs were as purple as burdock flowers. When they opened their mouths, I could see rows of pale, jagged teeth. They sat on leaves and twigs, watching us. "Sprites," one whispered, her gaze lifted like mine. A few little creatures dropped down from the safety of the trees, hovering, then darting over the knights ahead of us, hissing. I could hear their bodies tinging against armor as they swiped again and again at the knights. A sword was drawn. In a single blow, the pommel collided with one of the sprites, knocking it from the air like a fly swatted. The sprite fell onto the side of the road, where it lay, shaking, then still, upon the grass. I gasped. "Why did he do that? It's just a little thing."
"Beastly creatures, sprites," said a voice near my ear. I'd forgotten Hamelin.
He walked with another knight behind one and me, looking up at the sprites in the trees, hand lowered to the hilt of his sword.
"Creatures of the land can't be trusted. There's no room for mercy, even for the little ones. Large or small, handsome or monstrous, all sprites are violent and impossible to control."
"Not true," one countered. "The gargoyles are sprites, ancient ones, trained by the abbesses of old to serve the cathedral. They heal well enough." She looked up at the trees. "These little ones seem harmless. No need to be brutes." The knights were clearly not of the same mind.
"All respect, Diviner, but you've never been to the Chiming Wood," said the man behind me, "or the Fervent Peaks."
He glowered up at the trees.
"There's nothing redemptive about creatures who would happily eat you for breakfast."
We passed the fallen sprite, its little body unmoving, as if asleep. I had the intrusive desire to lay my palm on it. He shouldn't have killed it. It's lovely, even in death.
"Not as lovely as you, Diviner," Hamelin said.
One snorted and looked over her shoulder. "Didn't I kiss you last night?" The second knight laughed. "That was me." He wielded his smile as well as Hamelin. "I'm Dedrick Lange, from the Siege. Remember?" "Oh, yes. Sorry." One waved a hand in his face. "All you seem the same to me." The knights eyed each other, like she'd said something funny, and I knew it was she and I, not themselves, they found indistinguishable. The abbess strips you of name, face, clothes, distinction. "Careful, Number Six. Someone will accuse you of having too much fun up here, on this god-awful hill." I shook my head, but Rory's voice persisted, a grating tune that didn't end. "You know of the omens and signs, and how to look down your nose at everyone, but nothing of what really goes on in the hamlets." You call wasting your time dreaming of signs living, Diviner. Are you married? I asked abruptly. Hamlin laughed, drawing looks.
Not even close.
Fantastic. I turned to one. I'm taking a turn in the grass. Don't wait for me. Her brows lifted over her shroud.
Really?
Really. I took Hamlin's hand. He followed me without question, grinning, and the two of us trampled off the road through greenery, slipping away between trees like we too were sprites in the glen. The diviners whistled, a few knights applauding as they watched us go. I doubted Rory was one of them. I hopped over a fern, lost sight of the road, and then my back was being pressed into a particularly wide beech tree. Hamlin dropped his helmet in the grass, and I withdrew my cloak. When I kissed him on the mouth, he seemed dazed, awestruck. Then reason caught him up. He kissed me back, then down my neck, his mouth a stranger upon my skin. I meant it, he said, lips drawing up my throat. You're lovely. Yesterday's divination. He cupped my breast through my dress. You looked mythical, practically fearsome. I couldn't look away. No one could. It was a nice thing to say, and it, along with his touch, did nothing to stir me. Do you need help out of your armor? He shook his head.
Wouldn't be knightly of me, begging your assistance.
I don't mind. He reached down and caught one of my legs, hooking it over his hip as he pressed me harder into the tree. Why did you ask if I was married? Wouldn't want to lie down with a married man.
Do diviners marry?
Did we? If we wish to, after our 10 years are up, I suppose. I haven't really thought about it. Hamlin cut me off with a kiss. Our tongues touched. It was warm, and so was the night air. Imagine the influence, he murmured against my mouth. Being wedded to a daughter of Aisling. Perhaps we shouldn't talk. He chuckled breathily, his hand rising up my leg. Sorry, I'm a little overwhelmed. His teeth grazed my bottom lip. No one back home in the peaks is going to believe I fucked a diviner. What little desire I felt fled my body. How rough the tree suddenly felt against my back. How cold his gauntlets over my skin. How brutal his armor between my legs. I pulled away from the tree so abruptly, Hamlin had to brace himself to keep from falling. What? His nostrils flared, pupils wide in the dim light. Are you well? I was under the misconception that it would be good for me, having a bit of fun. I scrubbed my hands down my wrinkled dress and picked up my cloak. But I can see I am not suited for this variety of it. Besides, I kept my voice cold. I'd rather remain practically fearsome than be someone you fucked in the glen. Hamlin tried to grin. Surely you could be both. Would you still be able to take pleasure, knowing I was not enjoying myself? That shut him up, virtue muzzling his desire. He looked so disappointed I almost apologized, but then he said, Can I at least see your eyes, or have your name, some token to prove we were together? I left him panting in the glen, and hurried back to the road, the coloured tents of Colston Fair beckoning in the distance. Chapter 6. Hit Me As Hard As You Can. Colston Fair was brilliant. A span of merchant tents in a vast field. On the far side of the field was the great castle that could be none other than Castle Lurik, the king's castle. I'd outdistanced Hamlin upon the road, and now walked beneath colourful banners. Writ upon them was the hamlet's creed, the only portent, the only prosperity, the only god of men, is coin. Beneath it, a coin I knew all too well was depicted. Smooth stone on one side, rough on the other. I forgot the risk of wandering alone in a place I'd never been, too mesmerized by the colours, the noise, the vivacity of the fair. Aisling Cathedral suddenly felt as lifeless as a graveyard to this place. In the distance, pyres burned, dancers moving around them. I could hear the fiddles, drums, but for every tent I passed, the sound of coins falling on counters, coins slapping into palms, coins clinking in pockets was louder. Coins, coins, so many coins. If what the abbess believed was true, that the omens took corporeal form and visited their hamlets, how the artful brigand must grin at his domain. The king's castle was near, yet it was coin that reigned.
Toss it. Oh, smooth side up. A good portent. Order more silks. Nay, an uneven sum. A bad sign. Reduce the price, or I will work with another vendor.
No, I will not pay. The coin fell strangely. I could be ruined.
I tarried through the fair, feeling close to Ashling Cathedral still, as if dreaming of falling onto a bed of coins. Ahead, a few hooded diviners and their accompanying knights came into view. I hastened after them, only to skid to a stop at the mouth of a stall. A merchant was there, selling finely carved limestone busts. "Did you make these yourself?" I asked in wonderment. He was an aged man with thick knuckles and thinning hair, who didn't look up as he spoke to me.
"Why would I sell wares sides my own?"
"Just a question." I leaned close. The nearest bust was of a child, so detailed I could see the tiny chiselled marks between its teeth. "It's extraordinary work. I wonder, is it a difficult occupation, working with stone?" The merchant snorted.
"You gonna buy something or not?"
"I don't have any money."
"Well then, Miss Questions, kindly sod off."
He finally looked up, saw me, leaning close to his work. Quick as a flash, he raised his lantern.
"Ashling's waters," he murmured. "You're a diviner."
He caught my wrist, bobbing up and down in my face, trying to peer under my shroud.
"Didn't mean to tell you to sod off. I'm on hard times, you see. My business, it's failing."
He wet his lips. "But if a diviner came to my stall, gave an endorsement, said that the omens favoured me, perhaps, that would be such a blessing." His voice dropped. "Or maybe, let me have a peek at your eyes. Everyone says that that is how the omens reach you. Through the spring water, into your eyes.
That's not how it works."
My pulse cantered. "Let go of me." He didn't. He reached his other hand to my shroud instead.
"Please, diviner, all I need is a sign."
And then he was thrown backward, falling with an ungracious thud onto the floor of his stall. I felt a presence at my back, saw an armoured arm. When I turned, my shoulder hit a breastplate. Two eyes, unfathomably dark, combed my face. Gods. Rory didn't touch his sword. He didn't even appear angry. And that made him all the more frightening. He spared me one more moment of his attention, then turned it on the fallen merchant, rounding the stall to look down at the man.
"What do you think, Maud?" he called. "Shall I take his hands or his throat?"
I turned. Maud was behind us, along with 3 and 5, who both held cups of ale. I couldn't see their faces, but given the way they kept bringing their cups beneath their hoods and swaying with laughter, I imagined they found the commotion, and my mortification, wholly delightful. Maud shrugged.
"Why not both?"
"Please," the merchant whimpered, knuckles bulging as he held his hands in a steeple.
"My business! The diviner offered to..."
"We both know she didn't offer you anything."
Rory raised his brows at Maud, then schooled his features, turning to me with the solemnity of a hangman upon the gallows.
"Well, diviner, what would you have? His hands, or throat, or both?"
"Pith, you brute! None! It was a misunderstanding!"
My voice was pitched at a shriek.
"No need for violence!"
"Of course there is. He put his hands on a holy diviner."
Rory pulled a knife from his belt and held it over the merchant, who'd begun to whimper.
"Any last words?"
My jaw fell open. I was about to throw myself in front of the merchant when I saw the severe turn of Rory's mouth slip. He wasn't solemn. He was smiling. "My mouth fell open.
You're joking.
Rory let out a low laugh.
Of course, you twit. You think I'd butcher him in front of everyone? You really don't know much about knights or traum, or come to think of it.
He scraped his teeth over his bottom lip.
Anything at all, do you, Diviner?
3 and 5 choked on their ale.
Quit playing, Rory,
Maud said in a lecturing voice. Suddenly the notion of violence didn't seem so abhorrent.
You're an incomparable fiend, Roderick Mendacious. A truly accomplished arsehole.
Rory spun his blade in an arrogant flourish and dropped it back onto his belt.
Apologies. Just trying to make things fun.
He toed the boot of the trembling merchant.
Mention you saw her, and the next time I come to your stall won't be so pleasant.
The merchant let out a sob, and Rory stepped out from his stall, toppling a stone bust as he went. I stomped toward 3 and 5, intending to lead them away, but Maud had already slapped a coin in a passing merchant's hand and pulled a cup of ale from his tray. When I reached her, she thrust it into my hand.
Ignore him and drink.
The ale was crudely warm, slightly sour, but its effect was acute enough. I drank deeply, and a tingle began in my stomach, my teeth, my lips. It felt better than being kissed by Hamelin.
You shouldn't be wandering the fair alone, Maud said, the picture of calmness. Where's your escort knight?
Don't know. I wiped my lips on the back of my hand, looked into my half-empty cup, and took another swill. Maud persisted.
Which knight was it?
Uh-oh! 5 elbowed 3. Someone's getting flogged.
She was with Hamelin,
Rory said flatly, procuring his own ale.
They were waylaid in the glen.
You noticed me go? I scoffed into my cup. How nice.
Difficult not to, Rory bit back. What with the show you made?
Like an ill-timed sneeze, Hamelin stepped into the walkway, followed by the rest of the diviners and their respective knights.
There you are, one called, spotting me.
She glanced at Hamelin and chuckled.
That was a quick roll in the grass.
Hamelin turned a violent shade of red, then disappeared behind a row of tents.
Rory downed his ale, tossed his cup on the grass, and stepped after him.
Uh-uh! Maud caught his arm.
Wait for me.
She finished her drink, then the two of them quit the walkway, heading after Hamelin, but not before Rory dropped his mouth to my ear.
Hope he was deferential in his hastiness.
I watched them slip away, an inferno burning beneath my hood. Then one was there, oblivious to my ire, as she linked her arm in mine.
I fancy a dance.
The knights led us, and we made our way to one of the pyres at the periphery of the fair, where music played.
You know, I said to one,
I think the king and his knights are not as decent as I imagined.
Likely not. No one is as decent as they think. Not even us. Not even the abbess.
She ran her hand over the brightly dyed banners that hung over the mouths of tents. I wouldn't worry over it. Knights are shooting stars, Six. They come and go. But you and me, our sisterhood of diviners, we're the moon. She smiled. We're eternal. My spite for Rory, my indignity for Hamelin, quieted. If I am as indistinct as Roderick Mendacious says, I thought as I looked at the other diviners, their cloaks and shoeless feet just like mine, what a happy thing to be indistinct from them. There were more knights by the pyre, dancers too, music caught in the air. A fast tune, strummed by instrumentalists fixed around that blooming fire in the heart of the fair.
Well,
one squeezed my arm.
Shall we?
I hesitated, afraid that I was a bad dancer,